We continue now with the story of the false arrest, where the president, the leader of the Kehillah Vitebsk, and three other notables were told suddenly to appear before the governor, and they never returned, but were imprisoned on the spot, and they were prevented even from communicating with their families. And Rav Avrom Segal, the famed Nadvin, and Bal Tzedakah, the famed philanthropist, was also seized by armed guards in his house, and he was removed to the governor's mansion, while all his property and account books were confiscated. And the Jewish people were tremendously perplexed by this turn of events. They had no idea what was behind this and how this terrible tragedy came upon them. And a decree went out from the Jewish community that everybody was to participate with a tiniest tzibur in a public fast. And on the very day of the fast, a messenger came from the Baal Shem Tov with good news. Dabkohos, who was a tzaddik nister, a hidden tzaddik, told the other hidden tzaddikim of the city of Vitebsk that the Baal Shem Tov had said that they were to fast for 3 days, and also to strengthen the matzav ruach, the spirit and the feelings of the Jewish townsfolk, and tell them, then make them strong in their belief and betochen in the good outcome of this trying period. And also the Baal Shem Tov revealed, although he told them not to reveal this, that in 10 days' time the evil decree would be transformed into a good one. The Malkiel, one of the Vitebsk Nestorim, went to the Iloi, Rabbi Yosef Yitzchok, who was a ancestor of the Alter Rebbe, with this news. And for Rabbi Yosef Yitzchok, it was the first inkling that he had that there existed tzaddikim nestorim, that there were hidden tzaddikim in the city of Vitebsk. Rabbi Yosef Yitzchok begged Rabbi Malkiel to please introduce him to the tzaddikim nestorim, to the hidden tzaddikim of the city, but his request was rebuffed. Rabbi Yosef Yitzchok felt deeply hurt, since the Baal Shem Tov evidently felt that he, Rabbi Yosef Yitzchok, was not yet worthy of making their acquaintance. And realizing this, he wept before Rabbi Malkiel and said, evidently, I am not roy, I am not fit to merit to see these hidden saintly individuals. But Rabbi Malkiel reassured him, and he said, don't worry, that's probably not be it. That's not it. There must be other reasons, hidden reasons, why you are not to meet these tzaddikim nestorim. Don't grieve over it, and don't let it affect your avodas Hashem. And surely, when the time comes, you will know who they are, and you will find out all about it. But for hidden reasons, right now is not yet the time. What you can do is to write Rav Moshe Nosson, and Rav Moshe Nosson was the Malkiel's teacher and spiritual guide, to advise you how you can elevate yourself in the Sulam Ha'Oila Beis Kael, in the ladder of spiritual ascent, and how you are to go from level to level. It was during these trying and sad days that some news began to leak out. The Pshmerel, the painter, had heard a bit of news that began to shed light upon all these entire mysterious proceedings, upon why these sterling individuals were arrested, and why Segal, the philanthropist, had his things confiscated and himself arrested. And this happened while Rav Shmuel Earl was working in the governor's home. He was a painter, as mentioned, and he was painting a house painter or a mansion painter, and he was painting a wing of the mansion, of the governor's mansion. The governor, who had known the Pshmerel's father and grandfather, so they went back a long way, both of them, Pshmerel's father and grandfather were also painters, and so he had known Pshmerel's father and grandfather from previous jobs, so he was on good terms with Pshmerel, was the governor, and he had wished Pshmerel a pleasant good morning. A while later, Pshmerel had overheard the governor speaking to his wife. And this is what he overheard. The governor says to his wife, "That Jew Segel, he's going to get what's coming to him, all right. The government gives him the honor of serving his fatherland by asking him to extend an interest-free loan of 100,000 rubles. And he has the temerity to say that he only has 20,000 rubles and not 100,000 rubles. Everyone knows that those Jews are filthy rich. Wait till Ludovic the Great, the prince from Poland, comes here from Krakow." And this is what Reb Shmerel overheard, and he began to leak out to people in the Jewish community. The Jewish community, learning of this, knew that they had to fear from this Ludovic, famous for smelling out Jewish money and lining the government coffers with it. Now they understood why the Avraham Segel's house had been ransacked, his account books confiscated, and his valuables appropriated. And since that they would surely try to squeeze out lischoit, they would try to get all the money that the Jewish people had, because once again the government was desperate for money and they would take it out from the poor hides of the Jews. All Jews were warned to hide anything of value so as to maintain the impression that the community could not procure money for the government loan, which in fact they couldn't, because 100,000 ruble was an exorbitant sum, and they could not come up with such a sum in any case. That Friday evening, a Jew stood up in front of the congregation, and he said, "Rabbi, please listen to me. I have a very, very important announcement to make, and I want you to listen carefully." He said these words just before Kabbalah Shabbos, and what he had to say was that he wished to relay the good news that Avraham Segel had been just released together with the other imprisoned Gaboyim. Now, this was exactly on the 10th day, as the Baal Shem Tov had said, though the people did not realize the significance of this being on the 10th day, because they were not told, as the Baal Shem Tov had said, that the people not be told that in 10 days the good news would start. But whatever the case, all the people, upon hearing this good news, breathed a collective sigh of relief to learn that the Nichbodei HaKehillah, the honored members of the community, had been returned to the bosom of their families. Their release had been brought about by the famed businessman, Reb Zev Wolf Ettinger, who had come to their rescue, and he had posted a considerable amount of money as bail. As soon as Avraham Segel had been arrested, his son had hurriedly harnessed the horses to his coach and rapidly set out for Varsha, for Warsaw. There, and in Krakow, he rallied support from Polish noblemen to exert pressure for the release of his honored father. Now, Avraham Segal had in the past, on quite a few occasions, provided loans to the Polish government and had gotten them out of trouble. In addition, Rabbi Avraham had an impeccable record and a wonderful reputation as an honest businessman. It was no wonder then that the noblemen who had dealings with him, such as Furstein, Radzwill, and Lubirsky, these were businessmen who had many dealings with the Jews, and especially with Rabbi Avraham, rallied immediately to his support, putting in good words and petitioning for his release, and finally bringing about that Zevulf Ettinger was able to come and be allowed to post bail. Ettinger, on his part, was confident of the support of the Gentiles and hurried to speak to the governor of Vitebsk to first to have the Jews released, at least on their own recognizance, for bail, and then to have all the charges against them dismissed. The entire community rejoiced that Shabbos. But unfortunately, their rejoicing and their relief was short-lived. On Shabbos morning, without any warning, the church bells in the city suddenly began to peal. Their noise did not forebode any good tidings for the Jewish people. These bells, the Jews knew, were calling all Christians to the church for a public gathering, and on a day when they generally would not gather. The priest would address his flock, and in the way of his fellow anti-Semites, and as had happened in the past, incite them to, God forbid, wreak havoc upon their Jewish neighbors. This was because the governor had seen that his original plan had been too direct, and the Jews he had arrested, and especially Rabbi Avraham Segal, had too much influence in high places. And so his approach, he figured out, must be much more insidious and much more subtle. He must pretend that he had imprisoned the community officers only in order to prevent the pogrom, to pacify the masses who believed, thanks to their bishop, that it was the Jews who were at the root of their abject poverty. The Jews were milking them for all they were worth, so the bishop convinced them. And they would do this by controlling prices and keeping them high, and were growing rich on the profits. This was not a new accusation, and the Jews had suffered from these libelous accusations in the past. And they knew that this is what the bishop would be speaking about this Shabbos as well to his assembled congregants, and that was the reason for the sudden pealing of the bells. And indeed, that was exactly what the bishop was saying. The bishop finally finished haranguing the crowd, completed his demagoguery with the invitation to his people to return once again on Sunday to hear his divrei sitna, his words of hate, again, and fire them up with anti-Semitism a final time on Sunday before they would be ready to go out to riot, to rob, to plunder, and to pillage. The Jews, huddled in their homes behind locked doors and closed shutters, Nebuch awaited the worst. A pogrom seemed to be imminent. When they found out that the bishop had postponed the actions till Sunday, and said, come again and I'll be speaking to you again, don't do anything yet, they sighed in temporary relief. The danger was one day further, they felt. And surely, Yeshua Hashem Keheref Ayim, God would help them in the interim, that somehow, some way, they would be saved from the pogrom. Rabbi Yosef Yitzchok, too, heard the church bells, and he wondered, what was with the promise of the Baal Shem Tov? True, that which the Baal Shem Tov had said, that on the 10th day, good news would arrive, that had happened. And the Jews who were imprisoned were released. But look what was happening now. It's pogrom for all the community. All lives were in danger. Was the release of these Jews only a beginning and meant to give way to newer, more horrible dangers? God forbid. But surely, if the Baal Shem Tov had guaranteed that things will turn out for the best, he can be believed, and surely it will turn out for the best. And the intermediate steps, those things that are happening in the interim, that seem to be opposite, are only temporary hindrances, inconveniences, but will not last, for the Baal Shem Tov's bracha was clear that the Jewish people would be saved. And Rabbi Yosef Yitzchok thought to himself, if only he could tell the congregation that as he himself knew, that although they were living in mortal fear, they really had nothing to fear, for the Baal Shem Tov's bracha would surely be fulfilled and all would end well. And so Rabbi Yosef Yitzchok continued to tensely await further developments and see how the Baal Shem Tov's blessing would come to fruition in its entirety. Suddenly, the church bells began pealing again on that day, but not as before. The Jews in Vitebsk had come to understand the language and the tone and the cadence of the bells. This time, their note was solemn, but not heavy, not foreboding. This time, the bells were calling all townspeople, Jews and Gentiles alike, to come forth in their finery, in their holiday best, because somebody important was coming to town, and it was important that all should come to greet this member, distinguished individual, whom the lookouts had seen from afar coming into town with outriders and a splendid coach, and hastily everybody was to come together to give this honored individual, whoever it is, his honored due. This news arrived while Ettinger was still talking with the governor. The governor was well aware of the influence that Rabbi Avrom Zev had in government circles and had to listen to him politely. And much as he didn't want to, and as much as he wanted to throw him out like he had thrown out the other Jews, he could not do this. And so Ettinger continued to plead his case and tried to point out that a benign approach, that approaching the Jews gently rather than harshly, would see to it that his request would be much more easily fulfilled, and he would succeed much easier doing it with honey than with harsh tactics. Having succeeded in freeing the Gaboyim and Rabbi Avrom Segel, Rabbi Avrom Zev still had to annul the decree against them. because while they were out on bail, they were by no means free. At this point, a messenger entered with the news that a very, very high-ranking government official had come personally to investigate the situation in Vitebsk as a result of the scandal of Segal's imprisonment, because the news had come to the heads of government, and it was met with great consternation, and a very high-ranking official was sent out to find out exactly what was happening here. The governor turned to Ettinger in near panic. What can I do now? What will I say to the government official, knowing full well that his rash actions, both in arresting Segal and the others, as well as fomenting a riot to underplay his previous actions, were not going to be met favorably, to say the least. And here it was Ettinger's chance to reassure the governor and tell him that there was a way that he could extricate himself from his quandary. And Ettinger reassured him and said, "You know, Segal told you all along that he doesn't have so much money. He cannot put up all the money for the government loan. And you've had his books long enough to see and to know for yourself that he simply doesn't have that much money. But I have made inquiries, and I am sure that if you approach the Jewish townsfolk in a nice way, then the Jews all together will contribute the resources, and in unison, they will be able to provide most, if not all, of that very, very large sum." And so Ettinger continued, "I advise you now to go and recall all the people to greet this very important government official who is coming now to inspect the scandal with all the respect that is due a high government official. And if you approach the Jews in a sincere, contrite, and honest manner, knowing the Jews, they will readily forgive you, and they will forget the anguish you have caused them, and they will try to procure the loan that you so desperately need." The church bells continued to peal, and slowly the Jews overcame their fear of the now quiet and subdued crowd. They too emerged from their houses in their Shabbos best, and lined the city streets as the official government coach with this very, very high government official passed through the main street. The coach rolled on slowly past the respectful townspeople until it finally reached the governor's mansion. The governor came out all a flurry in his royal finery, wearing his robes of office, and greeted his important guest with a royal reception. He wined and dined him, and left him with the impression that all was well in the city. Moreover, and as a crowning touch, he proudly announced that the Jews of his city would make available the loan which he was being pressured to receive from the Jews, which the government so direly and desperately needed. The official, on his part, was most gratified to hear that Segal was not arrested and that he was free. The governor was appeased and he breathed a sigh of relief that the visit had gone without undue difficulties. Needless to say that most of all, the Jews in Vitebsk were relieved that a terrible decree had been averted, and Rabbi Yosef Yitzchok, and the Tzadikim Nestorim, the hidden Tzadikim of the city of Vitebsk, rejoiced that the Baal Shem Tov's prediction that the Jews would be saved and there would be Oiro v'simcho v'sosim v'kor, that light and rejoicing and happiness would be their lot, that this prediction of the Baal Shem Tov would come true, as they had known all along that it would, and the Jews of Vitebsk were once again able to live in peace, in harmony, without fear of their neighbors.